Michelle, for that introduction. And good evening, everyone. Really delighted to be in Cork. Cork is one of my favourite cities. And Cork is the city where most of my favourite poets live. And I'm going to read some poems from Lovers. And I'm also going to read some new poems just to scare myself a little. I suppose a lot of my writing touches on the themes of ancestry and roots and the ways in which the physical landscape tells and retells our oldest stories. So I'm going to begin with a poem written on Ellis Island, New York. I had the opportunity to visit and to look up the ship passenger records of somebody I was very close to in Donegal. And her name was Mary Haig, and she'd emigrated in the 1920s from Donegal to New York for a while. And it was just a really lovely thing to do, to go and see her handwritten signature in the records. And I suppose I realised when I saw her signature, saw her described in a language that was not her native Irish, that it really kind of occurred to me how difficult it must have been being so far away from home. So this is On Visiting Ellis Island for Mary Haig. Oh, ocean of I find you in is not the one you spoke. You who taught me that to make a home is to make a sound in the world and be understood. For the bright black bogs we were raised on, heather furred and spinning invisible knots high into the evening. What is more vowel than a piece of turf drying in the sun? By night the ferry departs Ellis Island. In the waves the stern leaves a dark kaleidoscope of lace and disappearing knots. But I do not think of you as servant in a high collar, long hem. I think of you as bed dressed and holding me against a dream, mothering me back towards the bone again. In these divided states, I dream you at the end of your life. In the peach room with the peach blinds, upright in a hardback chair, like an ivy that won't take hold, like a woman mugged of her own name, like an empty boat, all day tapping the table tray, having lost your tongue, having realized that to lose a home is to wake somewhere on the ocean, knowing no cut of earth and without a spade for the darkness. So a lot of my poems in this collection, they touch on the theme of home, and I think I'm interested in that for a number of reasons. But probably I'm interested in it most because I grew up in my own family of origin alongside children in the care of the Irish state. So I had somewhere in the region of 25, 30 foster sisters, all from different backgrounds. And I always jest that this made me the oldest child, the middle child, and the youngest of the teens, which is very useful insight into family dynamics. So this in this poem, I have changed the names of each foster sister to the name of a powerful female figure from Ireland's past. Fostering is a very old part of Irish culture. Sisters. Let it be said I cut a nick in my own skin, and by a spit became blooded to them all. May swaddled in clean cloth like a gem, as her mother, aged 16, leaned against the kitchen counter and watched me cold. Brige and Marie, found in a trailer by the river, speaking in a twisted song. Emer, who was always going home. Neve, who I was wild for and who was wild for me, but who held me under in the pool until both of us were dragged out of the water sobbing. Dara, who pulled her shirt up to reveal a string of roses on her ribs. Here are the gifts of my father, she said. Grace, who could fix any error with a piece of purple gum. Sarah, pure as water, bold as fire. I can still see her tear across the hill on that guy's motorbike, high-headed and ready for battle. Tailed women, denim stealers, alley girls in white musk with nine lives, these were my sisters. We argued over top bunks, we bled on sheets, we were four in a room the winter the house was falling down. We wrote letters to the man on the radio. We scanned the news for names of the dead. We curled letters inside bottles and threw them out to sea. We snapped wishbones, swore on graves, buried our treasure. We swung the gold of our mothers over our palms three times and asked the air, will I be loved? Yes or no? Yes or no? Yes or no? So I grew up in northwest Donegal, very rural, very remote piece of bogland. And I suppose looking back now, it seems like we knew the healing properties and stories attached to everything that grew on the hill and that grew wild. And so in this next poem, I was thinking about the fact of these foster siblings who are often from far-flung parts of Ireland coming to this little bog hill in Donegal. To try and be safe from harm. So this is for them also, and it's called Bog Medicine. Drink these star-leafed nettles and keep in your purse a fern. To become invisible, say your harm to the hill. This hill is pagan. This hill is hill. It will answer in bog tongue and occasional fire, burning back the earth along the heather stream, despite bald heels of rock, despite the kissy mink, despite a saintly air, until the stream runs dark with what needs to blacken out of you. I'm quite obsessed with the year 1984 in Ireland. I don't really know what happened except that a lot of information seems to have gone into my brain in that year. I suppose 1984 was the year of Anne Lovett dying. It was the year of the Kerry Davies. It was the year of Eileen Flynn being sacked from her job. It was also the year that a 21-year-old Dunstores striker in Dublin refused to handle South African produce, and she ignited a strike, an anti-apartheid strike, that got the support of the public and of a lot of artists and poets actually. And I just think, what an amazing thing at 21. Eventually the strikers met Nelson Mandela, of course. I was trying to find my own connection to that year, and I remembered that my sister was born in that year, and that she'd been born with a lot of bodily quirks. She had a tied tongue. She had some small things that upset my mother, but that did not hold my sister back in life any. So this is a poem called Newborn 1984. for a Dublin mother, as my mother. The first wrong thing was this: an extra finger, boneless and pointless, the junior doctor said, as he looped a thread around the infant part and made a knot, wait for the lot to fall away. That was the season Mary Manning refused to pass an orange through the checkout at a Dunn Stores desk. A strike was declared, apartheid made the news, our battle is nothing compared to theirs. And all that summer, an unexpected heat curled like a bindweed root around the city, bulging and pulsing until even the swans in the charcoal canal appeared to be posing the question, when will it ever end? In stores, the till drawers lay open. Oranges sprouted fur, and Mary marched down O'Connell Street, protesting the divide of skin from skin and bone as any less than bone, as quietly beside a cot, a new mother still waiting wept. So, a subject that I keep returning to is the dark history of the Irish mother and baby homes. 1951, my grandmother became pregnant outside marriage, and she was sent from Derry down to the Westmeath Castlepollard mother and baby home. And like, you know, anything up to 100,000 other women, she had her head shaved, her clothes taken and her name changed, and she was separated from her child. And so this is Penance for a Girl in Trouble, 1951. Shame. Use this word when you speak of love. A man of cloth will come. Your new home is among brides. Deny the child inside you is the child you dream at night, and when they cut short your hair, watch the cuts fall like the soft fur of an animal held still by threat. Find a pale rose climbing a wall and consider yourself smaller now than even a thorn. In your starched uniform, step into a nameless stream. Feel the coldness between your thighs. Say aloud, in this life, I am drowning. So one of the things I also enjoy doing is working with found text. So I went to the Castlepollard mother and baby home, which is boarded up and mostly derelict now, and I just spent a few hours walking around thinking of my family connection to the building, and also collecting bits of things, bits of leaf, bits of scrap, like almost took home a bag of rubbish thinking, well, something here might help me write the poem. And when I got home, I pulled out of this bag of rubbish this old set of health worker instructions. It was laminated and dated 1978, so it had been kind of preserved and just found it lying at the home. So the title on these health worker instructions became the title of this poem, Six Ways to Wash Your Hands. And it's written for the Mother and Baby Homes Commission of Investigation. 1. Wet hands, apply soap and rub palm to palm until a white lather forms, like the spit and rage of women who, having lain among waves, were dragged back up again by the hair and stripped of their names, to pay for the wrongs in their bellies as they stitched lace, pressed linen sheets, and each week bowed their heads to the postpartum girls, all lined up at the font, like a row of roots half pulled out of the earth and still holding on to their young. Two. Rub right palm over left dorsum and left palm over right dorsum to ensure the scent of infant leaves your skin. The sour fumes of bottled milk, triangled terry cloth, ice cold smears of cream, the scent of sin can cling for years as potent as a bad dream of trade deals, needle pricks, poppies bloomed on the skull. The scent of a child in an unmarked grave may get in beneath your fingernails and cause all sorts of problems in later life. Three. Rub palm to palm, fingers interlaced and around the wrists to erase all trace of fathers. Never mention cuffs, never mention scars. Raise your head against the sky and let the violet clouds overfill your eyes as the names of these men become again unknown as birds. When you see a wing, like a ream of thumbed pages fluttering, take this as a sign. The fathers are no more. Four. Rub backs of fingers to opposing palm with fingers interlocked and loosen the joints of wards, nurseries, bolted pantries stocked with canisters of warm milk and cheese sold by the yellow quart as the imagined cream of it dripped from the mouths of hungry, swollen girls. Rub out the halls, statues, sills, leave only a rusted nail in a cemetery wall. Five. Rotational rubbing of right thumb clasped in left palm and vice versa to disimprint the memory of files. Wash clean the data until days, months, years signed by clammy hands run like slipstreams into a great shaking lake. This means that even should your lips part to release a holy word, all that will spill out is a wet pulp no one understands. Six. Rotational rubbing backwards and forwards with clasped fingers of right hand in left palm and vice versa to wear thin the heart lines. Be a sister and repeat the law like a hymn into the sink. Do not commemorate, do not remunerate, do not let the wounded woman or her child speak in a bare tone. Wash in this way and rid your hands of mother, baby, comb. So I'm thinking a lot really at the moment about the stories of men whose lives were entangled with this part of Irish history. And it's something I'm going to be looking at a lot over the next couple of months. And I suppose that curiosity comes out of the fact that I didn't know my own grandfather. He was never named by my grandmother. And so this poem is titled Dura Honorif, which means Woods of Conor. And I grew up in the Woods of Conor with my father. And Conor in Irish mythology was, in a way, fatherless, because he was conceived by a bird who is said to have flown in this window and flown back out again. And so it's kind of amazing to me now that this story is embedded into exactly the place where we lived. Dura Honorif, for a grandfather unknown. To you I owe my thirst, for a name gets passed down through the spear side in underland streams that pulse with clear meaning and thrive towards the lips. A name is how we match our tongue to the source and taste our own sediment. To you, I owe my whole obsession with the sky above the bog, the blues overspreading sods stacked up in neat triangles towards the sun. To you, I owe my hunger, for metaphor is a failed attempt to speak in common terms, and I was raised on the hill of King Conor, who, conceived by a bird, braved the air in fluent wing. Thank you.
Now that she's sat down, she might hear it. We'll give her another round of applause.